Lockson, Mr. Petty Jones, Mr. Miller Chair. The first bill up, Mr. Gold's bill, 194, an act relating to, no, I beg your pardon, not 194. 467, an act relating to the herding of fish.
Don't worry, you'll look good after this.
Mr. Gold is going to explain to us how we lasso, corral, otherwise herd fish.
Thank you, sir.
Go ahead, sir.
My name is Peter Gall. I'm chairman of the Special Committee on Fisheries. I represent District 2. I'm here to discuss the herding of fish by aircraft. If I could be so bold, I have some guests today from Labrador Bay. We'll be watching you, so be sharp.
We're delighted to see them here.
Thank you, sir. The bill is a very simple bill. It says that it's not legal to herd fish with an aircraft. The bill was introduced at the request of fishermen and fishing organizations around the state, not only because they feel that this practice has occurred, but I think equally important because the rumors of its occurrence are out. People are calling us fairly regularly asking whether it's legal or not. There is not time for the Board of Fisheries to meet between now and the fishing season. This is language consistent with existing regulation having to do with game. It basically says, as a matter of fact, it specifically only says that it is illegal to herd fish with aircraft. Now, one issue that's come up is spotting with aircraft, and the reason that the bill does not address spotting is basically that the use of aircraft in the air is the providence of the Federal Aeronautics Administration, the FAA, and unless some direct effect on the resource can be documented, there's a question of jurisdiction. In addition, there's controversy surrounding spotting, whether or not it should or should not be permitted. And until that is resolved in some sense, I didn't want to approach the issue in the bill. What that leads to is the requirement that the Department of Public Safety be able to distinguish between spotting and herding. And their testimony in writing before the Resources Committee stated that clearly only the most flagrant violators could be prosecuted. Now, how do you identify a flagrant violator? The people who have seen the activity suggest that when a helicopter hovers very close to the surface of the water, kicks up the water, the herring are near shore and are seen to be moving away from shore, apparently in response to the blades of the helicopter, and there's a fisherman there with an open net. It looks a lot like herring, yes, sir. Whereas if the fellow's up in the air and watching, it's not. And clearly there's a judgment call, but the fishing community seems to be satisfied that by telling them what is and what is not legal, that 99% of them will cooperate and we won't see a rash of necessary enforcement activity. I'd be happy to answer questions on this if there are any.
Just a quick, in response to your memorandum to me and to the Chairman Adelaide Herman of the Resources Committee, the two points you raised. Are you satisfied now with the fine amount? You indicate in your letter that $1,000 may not be enough, that actually a $400,000 set, $1,000, may not be much of a disincentive. And you also raised the issue of whether we should include specific language on confiscation of aircraft using set violations.
Mr. Chairman, my feeling about the confiscation of aircraft provision is that it would be a valuable and appropriate provision. It would be consistent with the confiscation of gear and other commercial fishing violations. One thing that needs to be pointed out is that the burden here is on the pilot, not on the fisherman. That originally the bill suggested that a fisherman could not be allowed or would be prohibited from attempting to catch such fish if he knows they have been herded. The burden of proof was so severe on knowing the fish were herded and so forth that it was determined that this would be easier and more enforceable. And if you were going to have a sanction, I would direct it towards the pilot. Regarding the fine, I leave that completely to the committee's discretion. It's my opinion that advising the public what is and what is not legal fishing procedure will, as I say, resolve 99% of the questions and the issues associated with this. On the other hand, if somebody recognizing that he's breaking the law intentionally sets out to violate the law, it will be, it is correct, a much more beneficial experience for the fisherman than a $1,000 fine would balance. But I don't feel qualified to comment on that at this point. I prefer to let the members of the Judiciary Committee deal with those two specific judicial matters of penalties because, well, frankly, both in the Fisheries Committee and in the Resources Committee, it was just felt that that expertise was more appropriate here. And I, other than recognizing that the confiscation would certainly be a valid way to go, feel that I should leave that to your judgment.
Thank you. For the record, Representative Grunberg is present. Mr. Hawkins, you have a question?
Several questions. The material, there's no definition of driver herd here. The material refers to a regulation prohibiting the use of aircraft to herd or drive wildlife. Is there a definition of herd or drive in that regulation?
No, sir.
Has there been an effort to define that?
No, sir. There's been no definition requested, and to the best of my knowledge, in court, when the regulation has been enforced, it's never been an issue. If somebody uses the vehicle to make the animal or fish move, that's herding.
And I guess the difficulty of proof that's raised in some of the material here is the question of when does spotting become herding.
That will be the burden on the Department of Public Safety, and they have stated for the record that they will only feel competent to address those overt cases.
I guess I'm not one to generally favor heavy criminal penalties, but I'm inclined to agree that particularly maybe in the herring fishery, that $1,000 fine is not going to deter someone from the type of behavior that resulted in the filing of this legislation.
I agree. On the other hand, I'm not sure that, I don't know. You know, if we have a conviction.
What about the forfeiture of the fish or the value of the fish?
This directs itself not to the permit holder, but to the pilot and the aircraft.
Is that because of a judgment that you can't trace it back to the fisherman?
It's because of the judgment that it's difficult to prove that the fisherman was in collusion with the aircraft.
I bet you that's easier to prove than prove the difference between spotting and herding.
The original bill put the burden on the fishermen. I would defer to the committee. Mr. Chairman, I would make one comment, though, about the need for the bill, and I guess it should be on the record, was that there is a well-publicized incident of this down in Sitka. I've been contacted by people who were on the boat, people who saw the boat. Each one has a slightly different interpretation, but there's pretty broad agreement that the fish were moved as a result of the activity of the aircraft. That led to these questions as to what is and is not appropriate. The bill is, in my view, more of a clarification of what is and what is not appropriate rather than, something akin to, I don't think it's the penalty that is the main thrust of my work here. The main thrust of my effort is to clarify what is and what is not legal in commercial fishing operations in the state. If you feel that prevention by heavy penalties is in order, then, as I say, I leave that completely to your discretion.
Does your research indicate any fishery other than the herring fishery where herding or driving is occurring?
There is a prohibition about moving salmon, herding salmon
from
closed.
Not whether it's prohibited, but whether it happens.
I don't know the legislative history on the law that exists which prohibits the herding of salmon from closed into open waters. That was generally a herding practice, if it can be documented, using boats, I believe. So in the sense that people know that herding exists and that it is an extant practice, yes, it is, in terms of, about all I can say.
I can answer the question a little bit more. There is a prohibition for moving it from salmon from closed to open waters.
Right.
But there is no prohibition against herding salmon in open water. And I'll give you two examples. One is a gill net, and you set your net, and then you want to take your boat from one end of the net to the other. You obviously drive down the side of the net you think the fish are coming from,
and
right? And you try to move them into the net. The second example is in the seining. When you're trying to close your seine up, you actively have plungers, and you plunge the open area of your net, trying to create a wall of bubbles to keep the fish corralled up. So, yes, there are examples of it that happen.
And also,
but none by aircraft?
Yes, I can.
There is some testimony that you can move fish by aircraft, but it's not,
it's not
been refined to quite the art of using a helicopter.
As you know, nothing gives me greater pleasure than to sit and converse with you. I must leave. I'd like to defer to Bob Lake, who has got visual experience of the herding of fish by aircraft and testified as such at the Fisheries Committee. He could respond to that in depth. If you have other questions for me, though, I'm at your service. Thank you, gentlemen.
I just might observe that the only question in my mind is that it appears that the herding question that resulted in this bill was in a fishery that's only open for a matter of
hours,
minutes, or hours. And herding of fish may not be as, by aircraft, may not be quite as outrageous a practice in a fishery that's open for a much longer period of time and where the time pressure isn't as PowerPoint. I guess what I'm sort of thinking off the top of my head, is it possible to grant the authority to Fish and Game to regulate it by fishery? That is, to allow them to prohibit the herding in the fishery where minutes and hours do make a difference, but not necessarily do that in the case where herding may be appropriate, where there isn't as much time pressure.
Now, Mr. Chairman, if I may, my name is Bob Blake, and I represent the Cordova District Fishermen United and the United Fishermen of Alaska. As Mr. Gall said, I testified before the Special Committee on Fisheries on herding with aircraft, and at the Resource Committee. They got into discussions of altitudes, whether it should be fixed wings or just helicopters, whether it should be just the herring seasons or the whole year. I have observed aircraft herding fish, float planes herding fish during the salmon season, which is not a constricted time frame, and herding fish not out of closures, closed water into open water, but in areas where the water was too shallow for the boat to get in, the fishing boat to get in to capture the fish, the aircraft actually land on the water and drive the fish out in that fashion. The aircraft was actually in contact with the water. So it is necessary for, you know, for the whole year, not just for the herring seasons, because there's certainly, in that particular fishery, they're fishing 5 days a week for 6 weeks.
Well, why shouldn't they be able to do that? I mean, you know, if there's fish in a shallow area, but it's all open, the only thing is that the boat can't get in there because it's too shallow, why not be able to...
Well, we're
fish
all
fish out where the nets are.
Yeah, we're
trying to catch fish, right?
Mr. Chairman, where I observed it personally was in an open area, and those fish would not have been caught. They were back out fish from a closure, but they backed out into a shallow enough water where, you know, on a minus tide where the boat couldn't get in there, so they moved them out farther with the aircraft. I would just have to assume that particular individual probably did the same thing with the closed water areas, but I don't know because I didn't see it.
Well, I mean, he's prohibited from doing it in closed waters, right? So, but I'm just asking. I don't really know. I mean, if a fisherman is out there, he's in open waters, he's doing everything legal except, and as Representative Sun has pointed out, in other circumstances, fishermen drive fish. What's so terrible about this? I mean, because a fisherman's out there to catch fish, right? And as long as he's doing it in an open area, why not let him catch the fish? I mean, is it being unfair to the fish or something? I mean, I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, I think that, you know, in the case that I saw, those fish, and probably even the markers, the markers probably haven't been changed for 10 years, let's say, in that particular area. Those fish were actually part of the escapement. I mean, they were black fish. They really shouldn't have been sold, but they were sold. And I would just assume that, you know, the department, by not moving those markers, well, on a 3 foot minus tide, the fish will back outside the market, but nobody can get them anyhow, right? So they're just good as in the escapement. It's being done. As Representative Gall said, they have had a lot of calls, you know, of other people who have seen these practices in operation wanting to know whether it's legal or not to do it, because I mean, it's unfair competition if one person can actually drive or herd fish and another person doing the more moral and ethically proper operation.
I guess I don't have a problem with putting the law in to prohibit the driving and herding fish by aircraft, but I do have a little problem, I guess, with the amount of the penalty. And whenever we get into resource or wildlife resource issues, we always have a hard time coming up with what's the value of the penalty to be. And $1,000 isn't much in a herring fishery. And for one thing, this is aimed at the pilot and not the owner of the vessel. And I think I agree with Don that we could probably easier to prove that connection than anything else here. Somebody has to have hired the guy to do it. But what's your feeling on the penalty? Class B misdemeanor or $1,000.
question with that, Chairman?
Go ahead.
Well, to me, the penalty is not very important. If a person that would get cited under this bill would more than likely have to be seen by the Fish and Wildlife Protection Officer in order for him to decide that he was going to issue a citation. And if that was the case in a herring fishery, those fish would still be alive, and they'd either have to turn them loose or the department would confiscate them, I would think. And the same way with salmon, they'd either have to be turned loose or, you know, turned over to the department. So the thing that would be the most devastating of one being cited for this would be the fact that, you know, in those high-pressure fisheries like the one-hour fishery, hey, it's all over. You know, the whole season is gone in one fell swoop. So to me, the penalty, the fine, is, and the penalty really is of less importance than just having the law in the books so they can stop it from happening. Guaranteed, if they did get away with it and did sell the fish and then were reported at a later date by someone who, you know, saw it happen, then of course the fine would be insignificant unless they went back and confiscated those fish away. But they do that with, you know, most violations. They'll take the fish that are, have been caught.
Thank you very much. Further questions?
Mr. Clark? Not of this witness, but can somebody tell me what the fine is, could be for an A misdemeanor?
$5,000
a year. I don't care about the days. Dollars.
Either the Department of Fish and Game or Department of Law, whichever one is the lead off. But.
Yeah, I'm not fine.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Clasby. I'm here representing the Washington Department of Fish and Game. We're supportive of the concept of the bill, and I'm here to answer any questions that the chairman or members of the committee may have.
Well, I'll just get into penalties. What are some of the other penalties on fish and game violations?
I believe in being able to kill me. I think they're all Class D misdemeanors, primarily, unless they go after them.
Is there a confiscation of gear or vessel?
Yes, there's both a criminal and a civil way to seize, confiscate some gear, depending on what the violation is.
Do you have anybody else here have any of the, give us some ideas what the other penalties are in which we confiscate gear, vessel, or catch?
I believe, and I'd have to look in Title 16, most of them deal with fishing, commercial fishing operations in closed waters, and violations of certain statutes not and regulations, not all of them. And then I think it, how far enforcement and Department of Law go on it depends on the severity of the incident that happened. The person caught one undersized Chinook salmon in the coal fisheries, they're probably going to go just after some part of a Class B misdemeanor. If he took $250,000 worth of king crab during the season, they're probably going to take his boat, either criminally or do a civil action, take the catch, take the permit, and everything else, get their hands on.
Can I follow up? Just sure. What do you know what the penalty is for herding fish from a closed to an open area, and whether forfeiture is a part of the penalty for that?
It would be a Class B misdemeanor, and whether they could have criminal forfeiture, I wouldn't know. I'm not an attorney, paralegal, so I can't. I'm not that familiar with the seizure and forfeiture.
So the way the forfeiture stuff works, it doesn't automatically apply to every crime. It's only specific crimes.
Thank you.
Other questions from members of the committee? Oh, Mr. Benbury.
Yes, I do. And I'm not sure if this is, if you know the answer to this, Mr. Crosby, if not, then you can answer that. Representative Gall's letter of January 18, he indicates at the top of page 2, the sponsor substitute, and that's the bill we're dealing with, is patterned after a regulation prohibiting the use of aircraft to herd or drive wildlife. This regulation has been used successfully several times, and he describes the incident. In our packet, the only regulation I see is 5 AAC 81.072 that includes the following methods and means of taking game are prohibited, and then it says for the use of a helicopter or rotorcraft in any manner except to transport hunters and hunting gear, etc. And then sub 5, the use of it is illegal with the use of an aircraft, etc., for the purpose of herding, driving, or molesting game. Is that what's referred to here, or is there something else that's similar that applies to fish?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a copy of Senator Gall's letter, but I believe what he's referring to is the federal regulation, not the state regulation.
Well,
as
yeah,
he was mentioning before, and what you have there is
and there's something that concerns
state game regulation.
Yeah, that's the game reg that I have there, and there's also something that prohibits, it doesn't relate to aircraft, but it says it's unlawful to drive or attempt to drive salmon from waters closed to salmon fishing into presumably open waters. You think he's talking about a federal reg?
Could be, but I'm not sure. I don't know what was in his mind.
If there is a federal, so you don't know whether there's a federal reg or not?
I think there is, and that's the one that the representative mentioned during his testimony just a little bit earlier that had been enforceable. But you have to realize that state fish and wildlife protection officers are not deputized to enforce all federal regulations, and this would be one of them. So,
how difficult would it be to get them deputized to enforce that as well?
There would have to be a cooperative enforcement agreement between that federal agency and Department of Public Safety. Although I guess I'd say that in a number of cases, our enforcement people have been reluctant to enforce federal regulations because of the jurisdictional court problems. Where do you take them to court? And they don't like to get involved in the federal court process.
They're
not really trained to do that.
May I just briefly? Is that what we really have going on here, that they want this statute because they're reluctant to enforce the federal statute? Is that why we're here today?
No.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay, well, thank you very much. Your thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Gail Horetsky. I'm with the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. I'll be very brief, Mr. Chairman. I am somewhat concerned about the present language of the CS, Responsor Substitute, House Bill 467. I think it is an improvement over the original Sponsor Substitute, which contained the word disturb without any definition of it, and which made that extremely vague. The present definition is better in that it says driver herd, and although they are not defined, there is a history of enforcement using similar terms in the game context, as a couple people have pointed out. If I might make the suggestion, Mr. Chairman, for the consideration of the committee, I think that if the concern I have heard identified by Mr. Gall and by the gentleman from the United Fisheries and other witnesses is that we're concerned about unfairly allowing someone to take fish by using helicopters or perhaps fixed-wing aircraft. And also there was testimony that you can use a float plane to herd or drive animals. I'm concerned about if we attempt to enforce this by prosecuting an individual for allegedly violating it, that we would be met with a vagueness or overbreadth challenge, because the legislation as presently written does not specify a culpable mental state. In other words, you don't even have to know that that's what you're doing. Theoretically, a person who lands in an interior lake on a float plane to drop off some people that are going to stay there for a week and go fishing is going to be hurting the fish, again, you know, theoretically, proof problems aside, and he or she does not intend to take those fish. They certainly don't intend to harm the resource. There's no question of unfair competition involved, but yet they have committed a Class B misdemeanor offense by landing on the lake. And I don't think that's the intent of the sponsor or, you know, or the other people who have testified. Perhaps language along the lines of a person may not facilitate the taking of fish by driving or herding fish by aircraft. Tying it directly into, we don't want you to use this to drive them into the net. Or another alternative might be, a person may not, comma, with the intent to facilitate the taking of fish, comma, drive or herd fish by aircraft. Now that's a little tighter because you have to prove that that's what he or she intended to do. So it's a higher standard of proof. But again, from what I've heard, it seems like it's only the most blatant people whom you'd be able to prove was doing it anyway. So if you've got such a blatant circumstance with a helicopter just hovering there for several minutes and is hovering, sorry. No, they weren't vacuuming the fish.
It would be hovering for several minutes.
It's been a long day. Anyway, if it's only the most blatant violators you're going to be able to charge and prove anyway, maybe we ought to just stick that with intent to do this in there and hope that with the testimony of the witnesses, and perhaps if there's a Fish and Wildlife officer who witnessed it with his testimony, you would be able to prove that the only reasonable interpretation of that behavior was to drive those fish into that net. Either of those alternatives, or something along those lines, might make it the focus of it narrower and make it easier for my people to defend in court when they get a vagueness or overbreath challenge.
Well, I'm in favor of your second version there, and I was thinking of this earlier, and I do know of cases where it's in a Chamois Bay in Prince William Sound where float planes land, and if the plane lands in the right way, it could actually facilitate somebody to catch a fish. You know, the way the bay is set up when the planes land, that's certainly not the intention
of the person who's
driving the airplane. So I think this, with the intention to facilitate language, is what we should adopt.
Well, I think I agree in the concept. I'm a little uncomfortable with the word facilitate. I had drafted, a person may not drive or herd fish by aircraft for the purpose of taking those fish or aiding in the taking of those fish.
Mm-hmm. That's
a few more words, but I don't know what facilitate means.
Aid.
It's longer. That's why I didn't like it.
Assist? How about assist? Something along those lines.
Do you have to then show a connection between the pilot and the operator of the boat?
Mr. Chairman, I think that would really, as a practical matter, be the only way to prove that that's what that person's intent was. It's obviously not an element of the offense, but if a good defense attorney got up and said, you know, this guy that was landing in the float plane had no idea that at the other end of the cove there were six boaters that were fishing, you certainly negated his intent to facilitate the capture of the fish. So in other words, it's not an element, but it would be relevant to with what intent was that person acting at the time.
Follow up on that. Just trying to get beyond the pilot onto the captain of the ship here, that if you have to show that, connect the two together in order to make the pilot liable, why can't you then make the skipper of the ship or the owner of the ship or whoever's running it liable?
Mr. Chairman, the original version of the bill did have language along those lines, and it made it basically an offense to knowingly take fish within 24 hours after the fish has been disturbed, driven, herded by aircraft. The problem with that is that a person who was fishing and took fish after having seen a float plane land, you know, in the Haines Harbor or something like that, would be guilty of a misdemeanor offense, even though he or she had no connection with that pilot and, you know, didn't intend to benefit from the pilot's landing. And so it was like too much the other way.
You drive fish into my net and my pilot draw fish into your net.
Oh, well, you know, just because you don't have a signed contract with the person who's flying, if it's apparent that there is a concerted effort on the part of A and a concerted benefit on the part of B, who's in the right place at the right time and is cooperating, again, it's a question of the facts, and it ultimately would be up to a jury to decide whether they think these people were cooperating together to take these fish unfairly.
Mr. Ripper?
I have several questions. This is to you and to Don. What if we were to just say a person may not intentionally drive or herd fish by aircraft?
For what purpose, though?
Yeah.
Just can't do it?
Yeah, just can't do it.
Regardless of your purpose.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking. That was the thrust of the law. Now, the bill, it sounded as the testimony went on like it was for the purpose of catching them. But I thought this might have been remember we had a bill last year that you can't spook game, basically. Yeah, I thought this might be another one, a similar thing. And if there's feeling that you shouldn't be able to harass game, then regardless of whether you do it for the purpose of just being mean to the animals or for the purpose of taking the animals, as long as you do it intentionally, it should be illegal. I would throw that out, and I think that way you don't have to necessarily prove that there was somebody waiting with a net around the corner. As long as as you could show that they intentionally used the aircraft to move the game, or the fish in this case, that would be sufficient.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, what about the person who lands on a float plane knowing from experience that the effect of that landing is going to be to put the fish over in that one corner for the next 15 or 20 minutes?
That would be knowing but not intentional. You would know that was the effect of what you were doing, but it wasn't why you were doing it. And that's why I wouldn't want to just say knowing, but with that intent. Then I have a few other questions, too. Think about it. Secondly, I'd like to mention something that we talked about a minute ago with the gentleman from Fish and Game, and that is apparently there was or is some kind of a regulation, and again I'm referring to a different letter by Representative Gall. The language is patterned after a regulation prohibiting the use of aircraft to herd fish, to herd or drive wildlife. As far as you know, is that also the federal? Is your answer the same as the other gentleman?
My answer is I don't know what the federal regulations are.
As far as you know, there's no state regulation on the subject, though.
I believe there is a state regulation that says you can't herd game by aircraft.
No, but how about fish? I know that there's one for
fish. As far as I know, there is not, except the one from the close
salmon.
To the open
okay.
areas.
Yeah. Next question. Originally, in a letter dated May 29, Larry Spangler was indicating that the Board of Fisheries doesn't have authority to prohibit helicopters or airplanes from flying at certain heights or speeds, nor from entering certain areas. That authority is preempted by the FAA. And apparently that was raised in the previous committee hearing, and it is responded to on page 2 of Representative Gall's February 8 letter when he states, "One issue raised during hearings on the legislation is whether the state has the proper jurisdiction to enforce the restrictions. I posed that question to the Alaska headquarters of the FAA and was advised that the state has the proper authority. As examples, the FAA cited regulations relating to the herding of game, aerial wolf hunts, and airborne hunting." And I just would like to be certain, rather than just an offhand conversation, I would hate to pass a bill and then have the first defense in court that this violates the supremacy clause because this is preempted by the FAA. And I don't, unless you have an off-the-cuff answer, just like to be very certain that we're not engaging in a futile exercise here. I think we could just double-check that.
Mr. Chairman, that is more Ms. Spangler's area than mine, and she is unable to be here today. They're doing something on subsistence this afternoon.
Maybe you could just...
I will relay that request to Ms. Spangler, and we'll attempt to get whatever answer we can back.
And I have a final question, Mr. Chairman. The bill passed out of the Resources Committee with a letter of intent, which is attached in your packet to the committee report. And it states, "It is not the intent of the legislature to otherwise restrict," let me read the whole thing. "The House Bill 467 is intended to prohibit the herding of fish by air. It is not the intent of the legislature to otherwise restrict the legal uses of aircraft for spotting schools of fish in conjunction with commercial fishing operations." And of course, if you're spotting, then I don't know that you would necessarily, particularly if we have that mental intent in there, be driving or herding. But I think that might give a very fine line to the fish and game person who's out there enforcing this thing. And what I'm wondering is, if, first of all, do you see that as a problem? And secondly, if it is a problem, and there comes a question of the interpretation of this thing, I don't think it's enough to have that fine line drawn in an obscure letter of intent from some committee. I think it possibly should be in the bill itself, so that every magistrate who's going to be out there trying these cases would precisely know what the law says, because they're not going to look this letter of intent up. Do you think that maybe the bill should be amended to add this very specifically?
Mr. Chairman, I think, Representative Greenberg, that there is a difference in fact between spotting and herding. Whether in a certain given instance, on a certain Thursday, in a certain day, what was going on was spotting or herding is a factual matter. And that would depend on, ultimately, the jury's verdict. And you'd have to have evidence as to, I imagine, the height from the water, the length of the time the aircraft was there, the placement of the fishing boats, perhaps testimony about the relationship between the skipper and, you know, his cousin up there in the helicopter. That's a factual matter, the difference between the two. I don't know that, I mean, it would be possible for you to write a subsection, obviously it's possible for you to write a subsection that says, this does not apply to spotting. I don't know that it's really necessary because we have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that what they were doing was herding or driving. And merely being in the air and looking to see where the schools are does not qualify. I mean, what, they're not moving the fish by merely spotting.
But presuming the aircraft or a helicopter, if I may, Mr. Chairman, has to, if you're spotting, you have to move from time to time to spot.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're herding, you necessarily move from time to time to herd.
You don't
drive.
Think like a fish, Mac.
What?
You don't think like a fish.
I'm sure I don't. I never catch them. But the, everybody, my kid catches them, everybody else catches them. But the thing I'm concerned about, and this is apparently in at least partial response to some of the problems that have been mentioned in the other correspondence, and that is the difficulty of enforcing this. And what I'm wondering is whether this is enforceable if there's going to be the, quote, spotting defense that arises every time you go out. Do you want to comment on that, or somebody else?
Mr. Chairman, I think you're going to get the spotting defense regardless of whether you write in a subsection that says...
Of course. That's
okay.
Yeah, so, I moved beyond that.
All right.
To the general. Go ahead.
I mean, that is a problem. It's a practical proof problem. I don't think it's fixed by putting in a subsection saying this doesn't apply to spotting. On the other hand, I don't know that it hurts to put in a subsection that says that either. The intent not to prohibit spotting is clear from that letter of intent. That being the intent, I think the inclusion in the statute of a subsection to that effect really doesn't make much difference in terms of our practical ability to enforce.
Would it help at all in these rural courts that are going to be trying the case to have this language in the bill itself?
In my opinion, no. Yes. That's just my opinion.
Mr. Tibbetson, wait for some time.
I appreciate the fact that Mr. Gall has sponsored this legislation and I have the highest regard for him. My concerns are, Mr. Chairman, that this is an attempt to pass a law to regulate a commercial advantage within the industry. One person did this during one fishery, and he was successful at doing it. Every time somebody invents a better mousetrap, are we going to pass a law against it? In essence, that's what we're talking about. So this man invested a tremendous amount to get into this fishery. Came down to the Sitka area, and he said, boys, I'm going to show you how to catch herring. And he went out and he showed every one of them how to catch herring. Is that what we're really all about here? We're going to take free enterprise and the entrepreneurial aspects of American business. We're going to tell these businessmen to compete.
Fly, herring, I think it's a problem.
A quota system over there.
Yeah,
there's X amount of fish that they're going to catch, period.
So only the people that own helicopters are going to be able to get a quota.
They all divide up right now over their spotter planes.
You can pay for the helicopter in one set, guys.
Well, that's assuming that you do that well on every set. You know, I don't know that that's necessarily true. If everyone has helicopters, I don't know that everyone does exactly the same. All that does is equalize the competition. But right now, we allow gill netters to drive up and down alongside their nets, plunging. That's scaring fish into a net. That's common practice.
But we're saying the game guys can't. Bring people in and herd game by helicopter. Which
we're not talking about herding game animals here.
No, I know. I'm just drawing the parallel between. We don't think that's a good idea. Maybe this isn't a good idea.
This is a commercial activity, and what I'm suggesting is that we're passing a law to affect one man at one time in one place on the premise that
it may become a more efficient way of catching herring for those who wish to make that type of an investment. And I'm really wondering if that's the reason we want to be passing laws around here.
Son?
Well, I have a couple comments. One on that, I think we've already got into the efficiency issue of herring. We limit the size of net, we limit the opening, we limit the number of people who can participate in it, 58 in this case. So I don't have a problem of dealing with the technology aspects, because we do it all the time in fish. We say what kind of net, how long, how deep, when and that. My question, I guess, maybe it goes to Bob, because of all the proof problems here, why don't we just go back, I guess, and just say you may not use a helicopter to either spot, drive, or herd, and just take helicopters out of the whole picture, and understanding that it may be possible to herd with an aircraft, and I know you testified in resources at that, but it's not nearly as efficient or probable to do so as with a helicopter. Because I think you run into Max's problem. When you try to differentiate spot from herding, and you're talking about a helicopter, is a helicopter hovering at 20 feet, is he spotting or is he herding? That's going to be real hard, but if you just say you can't have helicopters in a herring fishery, then everybody's equal. Everybody's got an airplane, and they can do with it what they want.
Not everybody.
Mr. Phillips, well,
everybody's herring fishing's got an airplane up there.
I was going to ask a question, but fish and game. The problem started, as I understand it, with helicopters, right? That's the only complaint. I mean, that's where the legislation became or was introduced this year because of the helicopter incident, right? I don't care who answers it. What's the reason for the bill? And what I can read here was just simply because of the helicopter incident in Pitkin, or in or around Pitkin, looks like.
Mr. Chairman? Yeah, that was the reason for the introduction of the bill, and that came out of the protest over the utilization of that helicopter. But as it turns out, aircraft do herd fish. You know, and I know that for a fact because I've seen it done, you know, mm-hmm. and by actually landing on water and driving them out. So, I mean, it would seem quite discriminatory if you're trying to stop the herding of fish to just pick on the helicopters, to me.
You're saying aircraft, let's exclude the helicopters, the airplanes. You just stated landing in the water and driving them. How about if it's in the air?
Look, Mr. Chairman, when they're in the air, it's going to be harder to prove that. I mean, this helicopter incident, they came down and were so close to the water that they raised the water. And in the aircraft incident where they get down on the water and drove the fish that way, those are the types of offenses that this bill is trying to get at. You know, the most flagrant utilization of aircraft for herding. It's going to be extremely difficult if they're 100 feet in the air or 50 feet in the air to prove, and therefore I doubt if Fish and Wildlife Protection would even cite those cases. It's just intended for the most blatant offenses.
1 year during the Sitka Open, the limited group that was allowed to fish there decided that it was really foolish to be out there chasing each other around in circles in a little tiny bay. If you've never seen one of those openings, never seen a video of it or anything else, you can't imagine the life-threatening, property-threatening, fearful sight that it is. People literally driving into one another, up on rock piles, because there's a horrible amount of money involved. They go out and take that are good fishermen, do it comfortably in an afternoon or two, and the rest of us will stay tied up at the dock, and we just split it up. They did that one time. It worked very, very efficiently. Now, what if this same group of fishermen, these 58 people, sit down in Sitka this next spring and say, look, at that helicopter worked pretty good last year. Rather than all of us go out there and bash into each other, why don't we take four or five boats out there, and we'll use one or two helicopters, and we'll take care of the quota. The interesting thing was, the 1 year they organized, Fish and Feathers kind of liked it because they caught exactly the quota. In fact, it was still under. They didn't overcatch the quota, which is a real possibility in a short opening. I don't know if we should let it.
Well, there's a little difference to that, a little variation on the theme. They didn't organize because they wanted to. They organized because Fish and Game said, if we're not going to let you fish because there's enough here. There's only enough for one or two boats. And either you do this or there will be no fishery. I mean, they're not that socialistic. Our fishermen are a little more independent than that. They like to roll the dice and say, I can get more than the next guy. But it did work out. They did leave one permit holder out of it, though. The one guy who didn't go to Sitka because he was on the board of fish representing them at the time. And they sent him a postcard and said, thank you for your $80,000 share for not being here.
Mr. Redbird.
I think we remember a bill that we all grew to know and love last year. It was called the Passing School Buses Bill. And the problem with that, as you will remember, was that you couldn't tell who was driving the car that passed the school bus. An enforcement question I have is, how can you tell who is driving the aircraft that herded the fish? How can you tell who was driving it?
They call it flying.
Okay, I'll buy that. How can you tell who was flying it? You can tell who owned it. And we dealt with that with a small civil penalty. But you can't tell, if you can't tell who's driving the car that passed the bus, I don't see how you can tell who's flying the plane that herded the fish.
Subcommittee.
I don't have the answer to that, but what is the chair's desire with that bill?
It's up to the committee. This is another one of these simple little bills that shouldn't take more than 12 minutes.
If you wanted this bill out, I would offer two amendments. The first to add intentionally before the word drive, and the second to add a reference, something to the effect vessels and equipment used in aid of a violation of 1610.135 may be seized and disposed of as provided in 1605.190, which is the seizure. But if it's clear, if you don't think this bill's coming out, you're going to put it in the subcommittee, I won't waste the time for the committee.
It's entirely up to the committee. If the committee is satisfied with the bill as proposed amendments, I'm perfectly willing to move it out.
I would be.
Me too.
But on the other hand...
Roger, would you agree?
Mr. Chairman, I have no objection to that moving out. I just want the committee to fully understand that we're sitting around here passing criminal laws to regulate a commercial venture. And basically what we're doing is we're regulating methods and manners of competition. And in fact, we're doing exactly the same thing that the same group of fishermen, and they're my constituents, I know what they want, I know what they're all screaming for, and this is it, because they don't all have helicopters right now. In 1958, the state did the same darn thing when we outlawed, up until that period of time, the power block. We wouldn't allow them to use that. And we've got a 50-foot maximum limit on our boats because everybody from Puget Sound had bigger boats. We were going to keep them out that way. We outlawed for a period of time the power drum, the power roller on the back
still
of the And the drum seiner is still outlawed in Southeast Alaska because Puget Sound has it. A drum seiner is much more efficient, catches, moves quicker, does the whole thing. Of course, not all our boys are half-person anyhow, so they're trying to catch up and do basically the same thing without the drum. I mean, it's ludicrous for us to be passing criminal laws to enforce methods and manners of competition within an industry. We aren't doing it for the grocery chain, and we aren't doing it for the service station guy down the street. And I really think it's time we, as a group, took a real hard look at whether we should be using the criminal law in this fashion. And to give you a complete bottom line on it, I want to see our fishing game code rewritten from top to bottom, because it's a total mess, because of one little special interest thing after another like this going through. I'll support it because that's what they want, but I'm not happy to do it.
Well, unless I hear objection, I'll entertain amendments, and I'd like to at least get our foot in the water on the next bill.
If I could just make a comment, I'm going to act up like that.
Yes.
If I could just respond quickly to Robin, I am not an expert on commercial fishing, and I'm deferring to the Fisheries and the Resources Committee on the policy judgment about whether something needs to be done. And I think I view my role as limited here in trying to just deal with the penalty question and the mens rea question.
I commercially fished for 7 years and watched the industry sit there stuck with inefficient gear, unable to compete as efficiently as we could have competed. Just because some special interest that were able to punch a bill through this legislature and get something locked in. Representative Sun and I have had a bill in this legislature now for 2 years trying to remove the 50-foot limit. People up in Kodiak don't think they'd exactly like that, so it gets killed all the time, you know. Hasn't got a thing to do with fishing. Really doesn't.
Mr. Clark.
I move on line 10 before the word drive to insert the word intentionally.
Would you object to that motion? Hearing none.
I move to add a subparagraph C that says, roughly, equipment used in or in aid of a violation of this section may be seized and disposed of as provided in 1605-190. For your information, that is the standard seizure disposition of equipment section.
And just
of
for the
code.
Purpose, may I discuss it? Suppose, this is just really a mechanical thing. Let us say that they can't tell who's flying this thing, but they can tell by the aircraft number that what the aircraft was. They decide that the total forfeiture is not warranted, but a certain penalty is. Under that language, can they do something less than simply the entire seizure?
The forfeiture is up to the court. Is that?
But
what
let's say they don't feel a forfeiture is warranted. Can they impose something less than that under that language?
Well, it would be a fine then, and presumably is imposed by the.
But that's only for the person who flies. I'm
but
talking about to the owner.
I'm not. Nothing in my amendment would impose a forfeiture of the boat or the fish because we're only talking about the pilot still.
But you know, it's a forfeiture of
the aircraft.
You're talking about a forfeiture of the aircraft.
Right.
And that doesn't get to the. It's the same thing as the speedless thing. It doesn't get to.
I'm not troubled by your problem because
you really are.
There is a limit. It's different than a car in the sense that it's a lot easier to prove who's flying an airplane because of where it lands, for example. There's only a few places a helicopter can land. Southeast Alaska, I would argue.
Helicopter or
airplane? Well, helicopter
pilot.
In that case.
It's easier to prove.
But there's much easier proof situation.
My question is just a technical one. Under that forfeiture provision, does the court have the authority to...
do a half a forfeiture?
essentially a monetary amount.
Take the plane?
Say either we take the plane or you give us $10,000.
Mr. Redsky's raising her hand.
Mr. Chairman, the statute that to which Representative Coxon refers is one that allows the court to order the forfeiture. I'm pretty sure this is the civil one. I don't have it in front of me. But what that means is that the Attorney General has to file civil action seeking that forfeiture. It's an in rem action against the equipment itself. I know for a fact, Mr. Chairman, that on numerous occasions in which we have gone after boats, large, hugely expensive boats, that the operator and owner of the boat has been able to negotiate with the state and say, okay, you know, I'll pay you an agreed forfeiture of $200,000, don't take my $6 million boat. So as long as there's an agreement between the parties, the AG can go ahead and dismiss the civil action pursuant to this agreement, because that's the person who brought it in the first place. It's not a mandatory forfeiture. You know, it's up to the court.
It's a may rather than a shall.
Yes.
But the only question that the court answers is, shall a forfeiture be ordered or not? There's nothing that the court has, no jurisdiction in between.
Not by the language of that statute. Okay.
I don't have no objection.
I have one other amendment I'd like to propose.
Mine's pending.
Okay. Is there objection?
I do.
Thank you.
Good. And the reason my objection has been based on my experience in these things, watching Fish and Game and their enforcement. You get some dehorned, high-booted idiot from Montana out there as a temporary summer and he's got this in front of him as a law, and he all of a sudden makes a decision that somebody has herded a fish.
Okay.
Now you've got probably a $200,000 or $300,000 aircraft. When you get in front of and DAs oftentimes have no discretion or darn little discretion when it comes to dismissing a Fish and Game suit because they come under such pressures from the department. There's only a couple of them in the state that have had guts enough to really turn on the department and tell them, no, I'm a prosecutor, I'm bringing the cases. So as a consequence, you end up seeing these ludicrous cases come before the court on a technical violation where you've got somebody out here having to defend a huge amount of possible penalty that doesn't flow out just because it's a criminal case where they could come in and plead nolo and walk on it. No, here's somebody right behind it driving home with the civil penalty. And if that's going to occur, and I think it's possible for that to occur because of the discussions we've had on the hypotheticals and the testimony that we've had, that it is possible maneuvering an airplane in the right fashion to herd fish, and so one of these guys gets the idea, boy, now I've got them, they reach for the gusto, and that's going to be it. Let's grab the plane and go.
Sir?
A couple things. One, the testimony, I don't think you can be a fish and game enforcement officer if they've been a blue shirt for 3 years, according to my seatmate on the floor of the House, which is one of his biggest arguments, so we don't get the real pressure.
Yes, you
way.
Do. Go into your fish and game cases in your courtrooms, and you'll find out it's the little stream guard they hired from Montana that's actually doing the case. It's not the blue shirt or brown shirt.
Yeah.
Right.
And the proof issue is going to be tough in this situation. Anyway, my biggest concern always, and I understand on the enforcement of the small cases, but most of the time the penalties in fish and game violations aren't anywhere near the damage to resources. It's only in recent years that we've been able to get the penalties up to really look after them. And I understand this is a commercial thing, so this is an efficient and closed water issue. But I think I would support the amendment because it gives them a degree of latitude between the criminal penalty of $1,000 and up to the vessel. The only problem I guess I have is probably most of the time the aircraft are owned by the banks anyway, and that causes all kinds of problems in terms of finding the aircraft owned by third parties. But
question.
Mr. Rinder, then I'd like to help.
I am not entirely comfortable with mandating the forfeiture. I think that there should
it's
be...
It's not mandated.
No, but what I'm...
Allowing.
The only question this judge has, if the case is brought, is if the case is proved, he must order a forfeiture. And...
No.
He
may order it.
May.
But, I mean, he doesn't have any discretion to order anything else.
Well, that's true.
That's the thing. It's either forfeiture or nothing. And I'm not sure that that is necessarily appropriate in every case. I am very concerned about that, and I think that we should give, in this case, a little more discretion to the judges, like in a sentencing.
In the fish and game statute, that provision is basically available for almost any type of fish and game offense. And it's not used all the time, so that shows you that there are other options. I mean,
but not in... If the prosecutor brings that charge, and doesn't bring it in a criminal sense, that the judge will be put in a position under this bill of either nothing or criminal sanctions, if that's there. But actually it wouldn't, because this is the civil. If it's brought in the civil area, the judge can either do nothing or a forfeiture, and then he has no choice in between.
Actually, he can put him in jail for 90 days under the criminal
case. It's a different procedure.
I know it's a different procedure, but that's available.
Question.
I think we all understand the question. Is there,
make sure you,
as many as are in favor of the amendment proposed by Mr. Blockson, raise your hand, please. Mr. Sons, Mr. Blockson, Mr. Phillips, Mr. Miller. Opposed? Motion passes. One more quick amendment. I think we should just put a period after the word misdemeanor, consistent with our other practice and other bills, not defining the meets and bounds of the...
Is that right?
Move the amendment. Is there objection to that? Hearing none. The amendment is adopted. Okay. As a committee substitute, does anyone move the bill?
I'll move it if the vice chair doesn't want to follow a traditional rule.
Oh, I'll move the bill within as amended with individual recommendations.
Okay. You've heard the motion. Hearing no objection, the bill moves.
If you, I thought forfeitures is a drug statute because they were so unfair. Lost there.
And here you are, the swing vote today. What are
and
you doing?
You
welcoming
too.
More to the club?
Right.
Okay.
That's good enough for your drug.
But be consistent, huh?
Yeah.
The next bill before us is House Bill 194.
Is Tom going to get a helicopter?
Huh?
Tom going to get a helicopter?
He's already got his pilot's license. He's going for his airplane.
194 is before us. We had this bill once before. We had a teleconference. Members were in the room. We occupied pretty much the whole hearing.
I got it.
Hearing from people all over the state. I think it was the consensus of the committee, at least for our questions, that the criminal sanctions in the original bill were just a bit more than the committee wanted to change this time. Mr. Clarkson has come up with a committee substitute that deals with the area of civil penalties instead of criminal sanctions. Or in addition to the regular criminal penalties that would otherwise be in the way it's stated. Not in hand. Ms. Clarkson, do you want to explain your substitute?
Mr. Chairman, the lion's share of the original bill has been deleted, as the chair says. That's basically the criminal penalties and the presumptive and mandatory sentences as a result of those criminal penalties. In addition, on page 9 of the original bill was a section that required the court system to report to the Human Rights Commission regarding civil cases that were filed. That section has been deleted. If I can quickly summarize the arguments, the court system said they didn't want it because they weren't computerized to provide that information. The Human Rights Commission still would like to see that section in. It is not in my proposed committee substitute. The other thing that was left in that's in the original bill is the aggravating factor. On page 8 of the original bill, there was an aggravating factor of knowingly directing conduct constituting the offense of the victim because of race, sex, color, creed, ancestry, or national origin. That's the existing law. Religion was added in the original bill. And in addition, the original bill had the civil action for discriminatory harassment. Now, if you look at the substitute, the proposed substitute, it eliminates all the criminal penalties. Section 2 is the aggravating factor. Religion is the one that was in the original bill. I am proposing to add sexual orientation. Also, the language in section 650, page 1, lines 16 and 17, I am proposing the addition of sexual orientation and the addition of language of mental disability. Physical disability was in the original bill. The effect of this would be to provide a civil action for damage to a person or to their property with the intent to intimidate or harass a person because of sex, sexual orientation, race, color, religion, national origin, or physical or mental ability. The damages section has been unchanged, I believe, from the original bill, and the changes in the aggravating factor are clear on line 28. Mr. Chairman, I have proposed adding sexual orientation because it's my belief that a physical injury and damage to property occurs often because of a person's sexual orientation. The most recent example of that we've experienced in Anchorage is reflected in a couple of newspaper articles regarding a murder trial that indicated that the two people involved in that trial were luring homosexuals from bars and robbing them, and in the case directly in point, murdering them.
Was that proven in that
case? Yes.
I'm reading that right now. Yeah. That was one of the motivations.
You had mental, it says physical, wasn't that?
Right. Physical disability was in the original bill.
Oh.
I am proposing to add mental. The reason that physical and mental do not appear in Section 2 is because there's already an aggravating factor that covers that.
There is?
Yeah.
We, Mr. Chairman, in House Bill 172, one of the things that, and they've got that in the Senate passed now, and they've melded our two bills back together, by the way, I put in an amendment that adds physical and mental disability as an aggravating factor to this particular section. I wasn't aware it was in another subsection.
12-55-155-C-5. Defendant knew or reasonably should have known that the victim of the offense was particularly vulnerable or incapable of resistance due to advanced age, disability, ill health, or extreme youth, or was for any other reason substantially incapable of exercising normal physical or mental powers of resistance. So we felt it wasn't necessary as an aggravating factor.
I wonder if I should have it taken out of the
I believe we have testimony from the Attorney General's office. Did you have your question for Mr. Clarkson? Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. And then,
well,
Mr. Gill, I'll punish the joints. We'll get.
I haven't finished reading all this, but guy, this case was in Anchorage here late last year. I guess the jury did find him, well, found him guilty of the murder. Do you think this would have made any difference if this, this was the law as far as the sentencing concern, or as far as the...
It may well, yeah, Mr. Chairman, it definitely would have. Actually, I don't think they've even been sentenced yet.
Well,
the convictions in September, maybe they have. It definitely would have been a factor to consider in their sentencing, yes, from my understanding of that case.
Yeah. They would get a more harsh sentencing because of this?
Very possibly. Obviously, it's up to the standard.
Just one of 22 factors.
Right.
Okay, let's hear from the Attorney General's office on this. Identify yourself. You with them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Joe Geldhoff. I'm an Assistant Attorney General, located in Juneau. Chairman, members of the committee, the Attorney General requested that we come down and tell you that our concerns with the initial version of this legislation are appreciably reduced, and we support the measure as it's enacted in the committee substitute. Was prepared to point out the redundant natures, but the new CS takes care of what minor remaining problems we have. As has been discussed, all this would do would give judges a little bit more flexibility in appropriate cases to add the larger penalties. The criteria set out here. We support this measure and we urge your consideration.
I must be confused. You're talking criminal law and some additional criminal penalties. This appears to me to provide for a civil.
Two sections to the bill. Section 1 provides a civil action that does not presently exist in law. Section 2 amends the aggravating factors that are in the law now for a presumptive sentence.
I understood the difference.
Right. Mm-hmm. But Section 2 that applies in a criminal sentence, right, and would, in appropriate cases, enhance or aggravate that sentence.
So the first one would be a separate civil action.
Right. Right. It would be separate from the civil action that could be brought.
I guess my concern reading through this thing, I see myself walking into a public restroom, some fake character walking up behind me before I starts to pat me on the backside. I turn around and deck the sucker, and right now I am guilty of number one, assault, and this can be added if I hit him hard enough, an aggravating factor in my sentencing. Plus, he can turn around and bring a suit and not only get actual damages, but punitive damages. That's what we're doing.
Well, if I can respond, I think that it just depends on whether or not the jury is going to believe that you had the intent to intimidate or harass that person because of their sexual orientation.
You bet I did. Not. About the time he got his hand on my backside, I intended to do it real well.
Well,
you'd do it if it were a woman, too, probably.
No.
I don't know if
you'd
do it.
You look at her first.
At least I look at that. But I wouldn't expect to find her in a men's
restaurant. Mr. Phillips, then, just put it in.
Well, I have a question here. Don, you remember the Marshall case out by Palmer and Longfellow? Mm-hmm. Now, was that... Okay, well,
that was the murder, right?
Right, that was the murder. Was a person's nationality or race considered as aggravating circumstances in that murder trial, or?
I don't know, but if I can answer from what I'm aware of, from what I read in the paper about that case, I certainly that evidence
in the sentence.
Presented.
In the sentence. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's right. Very definite.
But that's the existing law. Well,
I know that. We're trying to compare the existing law, which is right here, yeah. Or religion.
But John had a question.
Well, sexual orientation, I suppose. You could turn it around, and if your sexual orientation is that of a heterosexual, and you were being harassed because of that, for instance, well, let's say that...
You walk into a gay bar?
No. Yeah. I was thinking of making a young man, let's say, who's making an approach to a young woman, and she objects to him doing that because of his sexual orientation.
That's right. I like that as a response to Mr. Taylor's original idea, which is if you get grabbed, that's intimidation or harassment because of your sexual orientation.
Because who's the grabber or the grabber?
Well, no, I mean, I'm sure. Now, let's say a woman...
Put an affirmative defense in here that I have a right to defend my honor.
Posterity.
A woman says, hits a guy over the head with a 2x4, because he'd made a pass at her. Could that be an aggravating conduct because she directed the offense at him because of his sexual orientation?
I'll have a hard time finding the jury to find him guilty.
Well, according to the tort reformers, they do all kinds of crazy.
Yeah, that's true.
Sex is all, well, how about political?
Could I have political information?
I think sex is...
I'm trying to figure out which way that works.
Sex has always been in there.
Sex,
political affiliation.
We've been killed because of the political...
Well, motion to move...
Again, the bill is available to the committee for questions.
Well, I have one question, and I was mentioning to Representative Grunberg earlier, and this is for the, I guess, for the lawyers in the room. What is the present state of the law, of common law, with regard to the potential civil liability of a parent who is negligent in controlling their child? They're aware that their child has the proclivity to commit vandalism and assaults. However, they unreasonably fail to attempt to control that child, and as a result, as a proximate result of their failure to exercise reasonable control, the kid goes out, the minor, and commits a tort. Can the parent be held civilly liable?
I don't know what the standard is. I assume
anybody?
They can be held civilly liable. The negligence question is whether it's
Well, we've got a statute, but that's separate. That's
I don't know the answer to that. It's a good question.
Hayden? You got it?
No.
Since we talked, I was researching, I found a 1950 case from Nebraska.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Fool me.
What's the pleasure?
There's a technical correction on line 28. The or has to be reinstated.
Yeah.
That's
no,
what
that's
word.
After religion.
Yeah.
Line what?
28.
Oh, 28, yes.
I'd move the following amendment. That is that we omit the word sexual orientation where we found the bill.
Objection is noted. It's a discussion on the question.
I'd have a vote on it, I guess.
Many are in favor of the amendment. Raise your hand. On the amendment, yes. Many are opposed to the amendment. Raise your hand. Chairman, please, on the ballot. All members being present.
I got a negative here.
I'll move the CS with individual recommendation.
I was just going to suggest that we replace the word or on line 28 with the word and.
No.
Anybody guilty of that is.
I don't like the way you look. I don't like where you're from.
I don't like the horse you're running on.
Yeah.
Technical amendment.
I'll move the bill, the CS with individual recommendations.
Do I hear objections to that? The bill passes with individual recommendations. I thought we did it with 7 minutes to spare. So
yeah, we invented ourselves on fish today.
Why is that? What's going on? I keep getting blown out of that.
Yeah. Well, no, I brought up that point that you went before you got here about why not the guy, isn't that what he's out there to catch the fish? And then I thought maybe it was because it was being cruel to the fish.
Actually, fish and game charges brought against seine boats for hurting fish. Anybody
well,
believe,
you got seine boats catching seine boats.
Anybody that believes you can hurt a salmon with a boat.
Well, it's, you know,
the same guy believes you can shove a chain now, I want to tell you.
You have a 58-foot limit on boats down here, so now you have 58-foot boats that are 30 feet wide. You got a 32-foot limit on boats in Bristol Bay.
Wasn't even here.
And now you got a guy, you know, building aluminum one that's 32 feet long, 28 feet wide.
Was that the guy I read about in the paper?
Yeah, there's no bow. The bow unbolts off it. To get it transported, they bolt the pointy part onto it.